You're in tune with What It Is on WNCW. I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Fred Mills and Chuck Beatty. Today, we're looking over some of the 2010 Blues Music Awards honorees. Recently in Memphis, the annual Blues Music Awards celebrated its 31st annual bash. We're also kind of looking at the state of the blues in general today on What It Is.
Well, the ceremony was held May 6th at the Cook Convention Center in Memphis. And as Joe said, it was the 31st annual Blues Music Awards. It's hosted by the Memphis-based Blues Foundation. And as with a lot of award ceremonies, this has gradually gotten bigger and bigger, more media attention, bigger names, a lot of people performing. I'm told that it was like almost a seven-hour event this time, which is a long time to be sitting there. But luckily, I take there are a lot of performances that were going on. And some of the more noteworthy, I mean, you can go to the Blues Foundation's website and get a whole list of all the nominees and all the winners, but some of the more noteworthy awards were the Acoustic Album of the Year, David Maxwell and Louisiana Red, You Got to Move, the Blues Album of the Year, Joe Louis Walker, Between a Rock and the Blues, the Blues Band of the Year, Tommy Castro. Castro took three awards, I believe. He also took Contemporary Blues Album of the Year for Hard Believer that came out last year on Alligator. And he also took the Contemporary Blues Male Artist of the Year. So this was definitely a good year for Tommy Castro. Contemporary Blues Female Artist, Ruthie Foster.
Wow.
Yeah, she's great. I mean, I saw her at the Haynes Jam a couple of years ago, and she just tore it up. They don't forget the old schoolers, too. They mentioned the Historical Album of the Year, Muddy Waters, Authorized Bootleg, Live at the Fillmore. And then they have all the basic instrumentalist categories like drums and guitar, harmonica, horn, accordion, Buckwheat Zydeco, of course. The Rock Blues Band, Rock Blues Album of the Year, Derek Trucks Band, Already Free. A lot of people listening to NCW, big Derek Trucks fans. And like I said, you can go to the Blues Foundation website, and they've got plenty of links for you to figure this out. And so I'm just Chuck, I'm curious to get your take on maybe some of the artists here, and I know you've seen or perhaps even performed on the same stages with some of these people.
Yeah, I noticed here an Acoustic Artist of the Year, Louisiana Red, won that category, and some other people that were nominated were Annie Raines and Paul Reichel, the duet, the harmonica and guitar duet. They're very, very good. Guy Davis, the son of Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee, who I first saw in a play back in Winston-Salem at the National Black Theater Festival maybe 20 years ago. And he's quite a talent. He comes from a very good lineage of...
I didn't know that. Those were his folks.
Yes, those are his folks.
I had
yes,
no idea.
Exactly. May the force be with you. Doug McLeod, what a gentleman. Doug has been struggling with some health issues over the years. And I met Doug in the United Kingdom. I was doing a festival. I was headlining a festival in Bury, Lancaster, England. And Doug was on the bill. And we met, and we were talking backstage in the green room, and found out we had a mutual friend, the late John Cephas. And
Cephas and Wiggins.
Cephas and Wiggins, yes. John is one of my mentors and one of my friends, and he has just recently passed. But one of the funny things about it was I was all the way over in the United Kingdom and met Doug McLeod for the first time. And so we spoke, and he said that he knew Cephas. I turned around and dialed my phone, and John Cephas was riding on a tractor planting his spring gardening. So he talked to Doug, and they had a wonderful reunion on the telephone there. So it's just one of those very, very special moments. And they say in life there are 6 degrees of
separation.
Yeah, I think amongst musicians it's like two degrees of separation, because we're all like one big family, and if you talk long enough,
you're going to know
somebody
some, they know.
Exactly. Yeah. You're going to know somebody in common. And so I was glad to see that Doug was mentioned here along, as I said, with Guy Davis and Samuel James in that particular category. Wow, Joe Louis Walker, what a talent. Still doing his thing.
He's been doing it for a while.
Doing it for a long, long time. Doing it for a long, long time. You know, my hero, Mr. Duke Robillard.
Oh, yeah.
I just love his approach to music and how much he has taken the line of Mr. Robert Lockwood Jr. He's taken his turnarounds and made an art form out of it. And I don't know if many of you know or not, but Robert Lockwood Jr. was the stepson of the great Robert Johnson.
That's right, yeah.
And until his death, I think he was the only man alive that was actually taught guitar by Robert Johnson. So that was a direct lineage there.
Well, Duke Robillard has made a real conscious effort to keep a lot of old forms alive,
I
believe.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I think he's done a really fabulous, fabulous job. And I first heard him with the Room Full of Blues, him and I think it was Ronnie Earl and some others going. And it's an alumni band, much like Steely Dan. You know, people come in and go each year and with that group. I don't know if they're still playing or not, but they were just really they've been a big influence on me.
I saw Room Full of Blues at the Double Dorian in Charlotte,
over in Charlotte
back in the late 80s.
The real Double Door.
The real Double Door.
Yes,
and let
I
me
know.
Tell you, that night, that was a Room Full of Blues, if anybody remembers the old Double Door. It was pretty small, but you could really pack them in, and then you have a big ensemble, and it's just crazy.
Yeah, I'm looking here. There's good old Magic Slim in that category. Slim was in the B.B. King Entertainer of the Year Award, and last year I was in West Virginia and happened to see Slim, as well as Ruthie Foster and Kim Wilson of the Fabulous Thunderbirds fame, and it was a wonderful festival. If you ever get a chance, I'm going to give a little plug up at West Virginia. It's just really a wonderful, you're talking about fan love. It's just one big, happy blues family, and it's a great festival. I can't even remember what time of the year it was. It was, I guess it was in July or some hot month like that.
I'm curious, are blues festivals sort of, you know, the difference between that is just like a rock festival. You can see, you know, 10, 15, 20 your favorite bands all in one package, although maybe not as intimate and a full set like you might see at a club. But is are festivals appealing to you as an artist?
Oh yes, on several levels. One, you have a new audience, you know, the potential to develop a new fan base every time you appear on a festival. There are people that are there not to pick up their next date, but they're there because they're there for the music.
Sometimes they're there to bring their kids.
And to introduce, yes, and of course to introduce the next generation to the music. And the other thing is, most people don't think about this, the musician's life is pretty solitary. When you're plying your trade, your friends are also plying theirs, and you can't be in the same space at the same time. But a festival provides an opportunity for people who have made friends over years to spend time together between sets and between shows. And I remember very fondly spending time with Gape Mouth Brown when I did the Leaf Festival here in Black Mountain. Rosie Ledet and Gape Mouth Brown and I were laughing so hard that people came back to find out what was so funny. And we were just telling stories about things that had happened to us in our travels on the road. And we just have this big common experience that we pull from, and the jokes on certain people and things that have happened.
It's like getting together over the years.
It's a big family reunion. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. It's like a big, big, big family reunion. Mm-hmm. It really is. So I love the festival scene, and you get to be up close and personal with the fan base. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're walking around and people recognize you, they want to come over and talk. And you get a chance to meet them, you know, on a different level than at a club or some other, you know, very constricted venue, yeah. That sort of thing.
Well, you know, that's interesting. So from an aesthetic and just enjoyment part, yeah, I can see what you're talking about. What about the financial rewards? Because we're going to kind of touch on kind of the state of the blues right now. I mean, is it, I know like back in, say, the mid-'80s, late-'80s, I think there was definitely a blues revival going on in America. Alligator Records and Blacktop and a couple others were right at the forefront of it. And then, at least from my perspective, it seemed like they went through a kind of another down cycle. Where do you think we are right now in terms of being a working musician and earning a living, out there on the road and touring and recording and everything?
Well, right now it's been pretty tough for just about everybody. I talked to Gay Abagola almost on a weekly basis. We're friends, and it's not just Asheville that is having the problems with lack of work. People are trying to find places to ply their craft, and I don't know how much the economy in people's mind has recovered, but the actuality has not been as good as it, let's say, it was 2 years ago in the business. But I have great hope that it will come back. In terms of a musical form, I think the blues is beginning to be stronger than ever, and I think that there may become, maybe there's a second blues revival coming.
Well, let's hope so. Seem to be cyclical.
I think it's cyclical in nature, and that might come back very strong. Yeah. We were talking about value earlier, and I'd like to mention this, that this has happened before. And if you remember in the jazz scene, there was the flight of many, many musicians to Europe, mm-hmm. because they were underappreciated here in these shores where the music was created. That would have been the 40s and early 50s when a lot of the great jazz musicians went as expats to Europe and plied their trade and did very, very, very well. And then with rock and roll, when the so-called British invasion came, many Americans learned about the blues because
they brought it back.
It was almost embarrassing for people to say, well, where did you learn that song? Well, from your American Mr. Blind Lemon Jefferson. And they had no idea who these treasures that were right here on our shores. But people like the Rolling Stones and Derek and the Dominoes and other groups, from the UK and from Europe, were featuring mm-hmm. our old blues musicians and some of their music, and they patterned their music after them, and they were their heroes. And it elevated even the folk revival in the 60s and 70s brought a lot of people out of semi-retirement. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, there's a saying that you can't be a prophet in your own country.
You can't be a prophet in your own home, exactly.
That brings up an interesting thing, too, because we're also – talking maybe a bit of an age demographic here, and while you're talking, it came to mind that R.L. Burnside was revered in certain circles, and he slowly started getting into some awareness in the contemporary indie rock scene, but it took a collaboration with the John Spencer Blues Explosion, an indie rock band from New York, and then later I believe a collaboration with Beck, perhaps, and some remixes with Beck's producer, maybe is what I'm remembering. Right. And that, I mean, you can still hear that great remix that was on NCW and other places that was purely a byproduct of, I don't want to say younger artists and patronage, but at least making it an awareness to their peers and their generation. And again, that's the same thing as when the Yardbirds are recording Old Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf songs. I guess in one sense, so much the better if that's what it takes.
Yeah, well, I mean, whatever it takes to make the music continue. I remember very fondly that the last records that Mr. R.L. Burnside made – had a very hard edge to them, very driving, really exciting, you know, stuff that he was doing, but he wasn't really doing anything differently. It just changed the beat. This is the master that had been doing this for years and years and years. And
R.L. Burnside sounded like he could take your head off, even if he was on his deathbed. He sounded like he was
a strong personality. And you know, one of the sad things that happened for me was Bell shared, and I can't remember exactly what year it was. R.L. was down on the Otis Street stage down there next to the Central Bank, I think it is. And I don't believe there were 50 people sitting down to listen to this great, great historical blues man that was right here in front of us here in Nashville. And unfortunately, the young people had flocked off to hear some big, you know, rock group or some, and they hadn't, I mean, they didn't have any, I guess they didn't have any idea of who, you know, was present. Man, I wouldn't have missed that for anything in the world. And I'm just so happy that I was able to be at that stage to hear him in that kind of a setting. And unfortunately, he's passed along. Paul Wyn Jones and T-Model Ford, and they were all dear friends with R.L. Burnside. And I remember one year, I think it was the Gray Eagle Music Hall that they were brought through here. I can't remember what the name of the – it wasn't Blind Pig. It was something Hog Productions or some – two brothers down in Mississippi got Paul Wyn Jones and T-Model Ford and R.L. on a tour, and it was just really, really great.
Wait, was that the Fat Possum folks?
It might have been the Fat Possum folk. Yeah, I believe that might have been
Who. Fat Possum's done a lot to
that was really fantastic. Yeah. I mean, you know, you had like a mean age of about like 90 or something on the stage. These guys were really, really
great. And I mean, they
were
about 20 in the audience.
And about 20 in the audience. And the young women were just so enamored of Paul and T-Model Ford. And they were having a ball. I mean, they were having a great time.
What do you think? Email us what it is at wncw.org. For Public Radio, I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Fred Mills and Chuck Beatty. Until next time.